Hello and welcome to the 48 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney out of Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, joined as always by Kendall Rogers, Aaron Fitt, and gentlemen, we continue our conversations with coaches. I'm going to tell you guys, we are joined by the second most famous native of Council Bluffs, Iowa. The first most famous person being the great Brian Radigan. Brian Radigan Oak is from Council Bluffs, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so obviously we've got Brian O'Connor with us. Oak, 19th season coming up at Virginia?
That's correct, Runes. Yeah, 19th season.
Hard to believe.
Hey, did y'all know that he's on the statue?
get that out of the way now. Check.
Yeah, thank you. Now we can move on.
Before we do that, let's do the business. Today's podcast, as always, brought to us. By our good friends at Driveline Baseball. Driveline offers a variety of training, education, software, and hardware solutions for both players and coaches. Coaches, if you are overwhelmed by collecting different data sources, mass athlete programming, third-party analytic insights, here's what you do. Call or email into support@drivelinebaseball.com. Get yourself set up with a custom player development bundle on Driveline's Track platform. You can also look into Driveline certification. That will empower you to run Driveline-type training, pitch design, and or biomechanical data collection with products like Modus. So always appreciate our friends at Driveline. Let me tell you guys about Brian Radigan, who I think was Oak's teammate in high school sports. This kid went to Notre Dame. He's a year behind me at Notre Dame. Brian Radigan he's now Dr. Brian Radigan. He's like the Notre Dame football orthopedic surgeon. This dude is 6'4". He shows up to college at 6'4", 225 pounds with like 1% body fat. He looks like Tom Cruise. He's obviously a genius, incredibly humble. Like, girls are walking down the quad past Brian Radigan and just passing out. Like, that's who this kid is. And the rest of us, what are we supposed to do, right? We're just going back to our dorm and play video games. We got no chance to get a date with this kid walking the campus. And so anyway, Brian Radigan. What was your guys' high school name and nickname, Oak?
It was the St. Albert Falcons in Council Bluffs. Brian was the running back. I was the quarterback. I was the point guard. He was the forward. You know, he was the center fielder. I was the pitcher and shortstop. We actually, Runes, played Little League baseball, every sport growing up. He lived right down the street. I just talked to Brian the other day. Obviously, very successful. Played football at Notre Dame. Went on and played for the Colts. And just a great friend, great man. And you gave him a nice lead in there. So pretty cool.
Hey, Runes, go ahead.
Can I just interject here? This, I think, proves once and for all that pitchers are athletes. Look at this guy. Star quarterback, star point guard, and he's a pitcher, Runes. What are you going to do with that?
Yeah, I object is what I'm going to do to that. I thought where you were going, Fitzy, is I thought where you were going, which is would have been the proper place to go, is you were going to say that the Philadelphia area is the center of the universe because Brian Radigan, in fact, married a girl from Philadelphia. I'm almost 100% certain of that. So, again, it all comes back to Philadelphia. I've got Newtown Edgemont over my shoulder. By the way, I wore this for you guys today. Little Malvern baseball action.
Yeah. Freddie Hiller would be very proud of you.
Come on, Friars. All right, gentlemen, this is going to be fun. So what we're going to do is we're going to go around the horn. We're going to fire some questions at Oak. And then, you know, at the end of each round, Oak gets a chance to pick one of us off and fire a question back at us. Oak, you are a seasoned media expert, very savvy in the media. So this will be fun for you to get to return the favor to us. So I'm gonna start us off, Oak. So You may actually disagree with the premise of my question, so you can go wherever you want with this, but I'm going to put this in business terms. So sometimes when businesses operate at a very high level and then things drop a little bit, it's one of two things. Either the business got away from some of the fundamentals that really led them to that great success, or sometimes, hey, the marketplace just changes and then the business has to adjust to that. And so when I think about what you guys have done at Virginia, it feels like you've built Virginia's baseball program twice now. The first, let's call it 16 years, you know, you guys just take college baseball by storm. Virginia goes from, you know, a very, an incredible school that has baseball to a national power in college baseball, like, you know, snap of a finger. And you guys going to Omaha those four times was just, it was going to happen, right? Like, anybody could have seen that coming. But now, like this last trip to Omaha was not obvious. I mean, it feels like round two. So I guess my question for you is, did it feel like when you think about this run that you guys just started with this Omaha trip last summer, did it feel like the environment changed and you guys had to adjust to it? Or did you feel like, hey, just over time, there were fundamental principles of your program that maybe you just drifted away from slightly and you had to get back to that core?
Well, Ruins, that's a great question. I thought about it a lot, certainly over the last few years. And as the leader of the program, ultimately, it's my responsibility to put the plan together and set the standards and sail the ship forward. And I'll tell you that run that we had, Ruins, of having 15 consecutive, whatever it was, 14, 15 consecutive NCAA tournaments is just so rare. You all know that, right? I mean, how hard that is. And
that'd be second in the country right now, Oak.
Yeah.
That's so hard it is.
Yeah, it's darn near impossible to do. And right. So we had a heck of a run at it. And in those 2 years that we haven't played in the NCAA tournament in my tenure here, we weren't too far away. Candidly, I thought one of the years we should have gotten in. But, it was really, really close. And Runes, I think it's a combination of things. I think you guys would attest to this. You're seeing this across college baseball. Like, who isn't good now?
Right.
I mean, when Virginia started to emerge, when our coaching staff got here and we started having success in 2004 and beyond, there were a lot of college programs that weren't competing at the level that they are now. But just look at our league and the investment in the facilities and things like that in the ACC, how many programs have now become really competitive. So the field is different, right? A lot more competitive clubs, which makes it more challenging. And, I'm not afraid to admit to you, Runes, that I think I got away. We got away from a little bit of, what made us successful. You win a national championship, you play for a championship in 14, you win it in 15, and then maybe you get out of what has made you successful. What I'm talking about is, maybe we dip into some recruiting areas or recruit some people that, are not of what we built the program from. That, and during that segment, we actually candidly lost more players to the major league draft out of high school than we've ever lost before. And we just didn't recover well from it. And so we got away from ourselves a little bit. It took some time to kind of get that in order. I felt our talent and skill level last year was absolutely back to what we all know Virginia baseball is at and was the year before and the COVID year before and got. So we took a little 2 year kind of hit there and, we're back to where I feel like we need to be.
Cool. Fitzy, you go next.
I wanted to ask you about just kind of the building of the program and just, turning points and moments that stick out to you. Cause certainly there are some to me. I mean, that 09 team, I just thought was so much fun. And of course the regional of death and Bullet Bob Morey going toe to toe with Strasburg and beating them in that opener. To me, that felt like a pivotal moment that kind of kickstarted that run, and that run kind of kickstarted other runs. I mean, are there moments like that? I mean, along the way that really stick out to you?
There are so many of them, Aaron. We don't have enough time on this podcast to talk about it, but you brought up some right there. I'll tell you the one that I'm just always going to live right here. Right, is in our first year, my first year as a coach at Virginia, we get off to the greatest start in program history. I think we're like an 11-1, and now we're going to go down to Georgia Tech and start the ACC. And we went to Georgia Tech the opening weekend, our first year, and swept Georgia Tech at Georgia Tech, and that had never been done in the history of Virginia baseball. And then we followed that up with coming back home and sweeping Clemson. Right, so that was like, in this transition of culture change and what our expectation is, to start off non-conference like we did, and then boom, to go down to like a Georgia Tech that's dominated college baseball, right? That we're looking up to, right? And then you follow it up with the Clemson back to back. And so all of these things for 6 months that we were telling Ryan Zimmerman and Mark Reynolds and these guys that were wearing this uniform our first year that, like, We're not taking a backseat to anybody. And this is what it takes. And this is the mentality that it takes to be successful in this league. But then when you follow it up with actually doing it, right, now you got them. You know, we fish hooked them and got them. And then what happened was they then passed it on to the next team and the next team. And that's, I believe, how you build a culture and a tradition, doing it the right way, having the right standards and pillars in your program, but also delivering with those results. So that one, that first weekend for me is a big one. And then you're right. You know, we went to four straight NCAA tournaments, hosted some. To break through, beat Strasburg in game one in the Irvine Regional, win it, go 3-0, and then go to Ole Miss and lose the first one and win the next two to make our first CWS appearance was really, really big. And so I kept preaching to the team, and still do today, this theory of that, you know, you got to be in the mix to have a chance to accomplish greatness. What I mean by that is you think about a guy like Jack Nicklaus, right? You know, it talks about winning 18 majors. Well, what people don't remember is Jack was like in the final five and like 20 more, right? The point is, if you keep getting there and you get to that NCAA tournament every year, if you got the skill and the program set up the right way, that'll happen. It'll happen for Cliff Godwin at East Carolina. I believe it with every fiber in my gut body, because that guy's a great coach. He's a phenomenal leader. It'll happen for them because they're knocking on the door year in, year out. And that's what it was like for us. And finally, we were able to kick that door in.
And people forget how much talent you had even in the early years. I mean, you mentioned a couple of them, but I think with Joe Koshansky on that first team, yeah. Was he still there? And was Doolittle was a year later, or was that his freshman year?
Yeah, I mean, so you think about that first team, Aaron. Zimmerman was our third baseman. Mark Reynolds was our shortstop. You know, I mean, how many hundreds of home runs did that guy hit in the big leagues? Joe Koshansky, that first year, my first year, would end up being the ACC Player of the Year. You know, we had Warman as our second baseman, the elder Warman. You know, we had some good, solid arms on the mound and kind of, you know, pieced it together and had enough. You know, and then that first recruiting class was crucial, right? Brandon Guyer, Sean Doolittle. You know, though many, many other guys, Michael Schwimmer, who pitched in the big leagues and other guys as well. Yeah. I mean, you know, those guys, and then it just, you won right away, and then you're bringing in that skill, and it just kind of snowballed and continued to keep rolling.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, when you look at, you know, what you guys accomplished last year, I mean, we talked so much about, you know, getting to Omaha, playing really well in Omaha and things like that, but as a guy who's brutally honest a lot, I mean, when you look back at last year, at one point you're sitting at 9-15 in the ACC, 17-18 coming off that loss to VCU the midweek. I mean, let's be honest here. Like, what was kind of going through your mind at that point? Runes kind of brought up earlier, you guys kind of deviating from the Virginia way a little bit. Like, what's going through your mind at that point? And do you feel like the Virginia Tech series a couple of weekends later was kind of one of those turning points for this program? Because you guys, you know, you guys went on a run, and all of a sudden Virginia Tech went backwards that weekend.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, honestly, Kendall, what I kept telling the team is I kept telling them to listen to Aaron Fitt and not listen to Kendall Rogers.
I was hoping you would bring that up, actually.
Those are words to live by.
Yeah, I love it.
So
I will admit, I said it was over. So
you called it early. That was an early call.
I called it early.
Well, I'll tell you.
I should have had more faith in you.
No. So, Kendall, there was a real, in my opinion, a real turning point for last year's team. You know, early on, three out of the first six games of the year, you know, we opened up with Connecticut and then went to North Carolina. And three out of six of those games, we lost by one run. Right. In our history, we've been very successful at winning those one run games. Right. And, you know, that first half of the year, we were close. It wasn't bad. You know, we two out of the three games on a weekend, we get great starts out of Abbott and Vassell on Sunday, but McGarry wasn't giving us a chance much on Saturday. And we just offensively, the first half, we're just not doing what we're capable of doing, what the skill set was. And you know, we went down to Georgia Tech. We lost on Friday, and you know, we were still staring 4-12 at that point in the league, 4-12, and ended up 18-18. And there was a pivotal moment that, you know, really on Saturday morning before we went to Georgia Tech, I got the entire program in a meeting room in Atlanta in our hotel, and we had it out, Kendall. I mean, we just said, you know, gave people a chance to talk and said, listen, this is what we need to do. And I don't believe in hiding anything from the players. I always put it right out on the table, and I shared it with them. I said, listen, if you don't win every series the rest of the year, you will not play in June. You have to win every series the rest of the way out, and you will play in June. Trust me, if you do that, it'll happen because we'll be hot down the stretch. Well, they won Saturday and Sunday at Georgia Tech. We went and won 2 out of 3 at Clemson. The only series we didn't win was the Louisville series, and won 2 out of 3 or swept the rest of the way out. And it was I just felt like we finally started to find our groove offensively. We continued to pitch great for the most part throughout the year. And we just, you know, Geloff started getting going. Kent started getting going. Guys that were not performing at the level that we felt that they were capable of started doing it. And so it was remarkable. It really was. You know, it's just, if you have enough talent, it's a great example. If you just hang in there, right? And you don't try to do too much. We just had to be a little bit better. And they responded. And then how the regional and super regional went was magical. I'll just always remember this team because there were 6 times in the postseason that they had their backs against the wall, and every time they won the game, you know, until the last one in Omaha. But just really special, remarkable group that just made a decision that, okay, we're just not going to let this happen. And, special group, as special as I've ever been around.
So did I make the big board in the locker room for saying you guys were done?
That's just right here. I don't ever talk about that kind of stuff with them. But there was no big board. I promise you that.
KR, in fairness, in 2015 when Virginia won it all, I literally picked against Virginia every weekend for 4 straight weekends. I mean, it was. I just couldn't get off it.
You know, it's always interesting, guys, when you look at like runs that teams go on, whether it's in super regionals in Omaha. You know, we talked all year about a guy like Chris Newell having big time potential. He showed that in the postseason. Griff McGarry. I mean, I'm not sure I'm not sure at least 2 of us expected him to have the showing that he had in Omaha, right?
That I'll admit, I buried poor Griff McGarry, and I couldn't say enough about what that kid showed in the postseason to rescue his season after what he had been through with the strike throwing. I mean, hats way off to that kid, and for you guys for working with him and building him up to that.
Well, I appreciate you guys saying that. It's it's one of many examples on last year's team. Here, this guy has elite level talent and has shown in his history that scattered and the walks and things like that. But it's him. He, 2 things. He hung in there when we took him out of the rotation and he stopped pitching. He continued to pitch in the middle of the week in our scrimmages, not in the games. He'd pitch in the scrimmages, and we continued to work with him, and Coach Dickinson, our pitching coach, Coach Drew, did a terrific job with him. And I'll tell you, it was coming down the stretch, Aaron. You know, Coach Drew came to you on multiple occasions, said, Coach, we need to give this guy a chance. And I felt like we had to win every game. So for a couple of weeks, I kept looking at Drew and saying, I can't do it. I can't take the chance. He's like, Coach, I'm telling you, he is going to come through for us and need to do it at the most critical time in the season. We got to give him a shot. So what we do is when we had the no-hitter going against Wake, you know, on Friday night, you know, put him in the 9th inning. He was dominant and put him in a couple situations. And then all of a sudden, Griff didn't even pitch in the ACC tournament. You know, when we played in the semifinals, he didn't throw a pitch, but we got into that regional and because of the work and preparation he put in, he was fantastic. And he's off to a really nice start in his pro career as well.
That's great.
Love it. All right, Oak, your turn.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, my first one's for Kendall here. Kendall. Yes. Hey, you know, listen, this maybe goes along line in your guys' prediction and things like that, but you guys a lot of times get a lot of grief from college baseball fans. I mean, I love what you guys do at D1 baseball, and I follow it. You know, I read articles and listen to podcasts and things like that. I'm a huge fan of what you guys do, but you know, mostly from the, what do we call them? Maybe like keyboard warriors on Twitter or, you know, in the comments section, things like that. You guys can get a lot of grief at times. Is there a like so-called mean tweet that sticks out to you that maybe just makes you laugh?
I mean, I'll have people just, you know, say cuss words and things like that to me. You know, it's not really funny, but actually to give you an idea of like how crazy fans can get, this is back when I worked at Rivals and worked with Yahoo, and I actually had, and I'm not even going to name the school because I don't want to people their fans to get mad at me, but I had like a fan from the school like email me on a company email and say like threaten to do really bad things to me, and like and at that time like Yahoo Sports actually sent the guy like a letter of warning from like a legal letterhead for emailing me that. So that's probably the worst thing. I'll be honest with you, Oak. I mean, I think when you look at fans, I know it's like cliche to say this, but like the fact that people want to interact and want to go back and forth and they'll kind of chip at you a little bit. Like I want people to care about college baseball. And to me, like if more people are kind of coming at you like that, that tells me at least to some extent they care about the sport. So in a weird way, like it's a little annoying, but in another way, I kind of enjoy it a little bit. And that's kind of why I go back and forth with them.
Yeah. So Kendall, just as a follow-up, like what, I mean, all three of you guys, you guys are so invested in college baseball, right? Like what appeals to you what about college baseball, right? Because I think all three of you are so talented that you could be covering other sports, multiple sports, things like that. But like, what is it? What, you know, why college baseball? Why not the major leagues?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, and we'll kind of go to Aaron after this. But, you know, when I was at Yahoo back then, you know, I had opportunities to go cover big league baseball. And, like, I never really, like, honestly, with Yahoo, and, like, honestly had no desire. Like, I loved college baseball. Loved, to be honest with you, I love the access to coaches. Like, when I talk to people that work for, like, team sites, whether it's a UVA fan site or a Texas fan site, like the fact that we have the access that we do to head coaches, like they're blown away. Like when they cover football or even basketball, they're blown away, like the access we get. So that aspect to me is really desirable. And the other thing, and I'm not just saying this, like the fact that we can help push and promote and help take college baseball to the next level, to me, like that gives me some gratification. Like I just love this sport. And to be honest with you, I don't know if I've even ever told you the story, but like the reason why I came to love this sport is, you know, my parents growing up when I was a kid would take me over to College Station and we would go watch A&M versus Texas in baseball. We'd go to the Southwest Conference tournament. I still remember like a North Carolina hitter back in the 93 College Station regional getting a standing ovation from 9,000 people that were fans of a team that he didn't even play on. So like just things like that, I just love about college baseball. And that's why I have zero desire to ever get in a pro ball.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Same. And you know, in my case, I didn't grow up in a hotbed for college baseball. I grew up in Central Mass, you know, not a lot of college baseball fans, frankly, in the hills of Central Massachusetts, but we would go to Cape League games, my dad and I. And so I kind of got a taste of it there, but honestly, we went to a lot more, you know, minor league games and big league games over the years. We drive the country going to baseball games. So I fell in love with baseball first. And then I kind of fell into college baseball. You know, I started at Baseball America in 2004 and very quickly got my feet into the space. And, right away I was like, wow, it's just the vibe is totally different. You know, like people here, the passion that you see every week, you know, it's like, I think part of it is the fact there's only a 56 game season and you've got that series structure and each series means a lot. I love, you know, the intensity that you see just in a day-to-day basis, you know, regular season games compared to the doldrums of August in, you know, Major League Baseball or, you know, certainly minor league baseball. There's no energy. I mean, it's just a totally different atmosphere. And so that part really appealed to me. And you know, right now at this point, I actually think we have a better brand of baseball at the college level. I think it's more interesting. You know, I mean, it's the three true outcome stuff in the big league level. You know, home runs, strikeouts, and walks. It's rampant. And yes, that stuff is also on the rise at our level, but not nearly to the same degree, at least right now. And I hope it stays that way, because I like that we have some variety in our play, that we have bunting teams and running teams and yes, home run teams. But that was what was lacking, I think, in our sport, you know, 2011, 12, 13, after the bats and the balls changed. We didn't have variety, especially in Omaha. It was the same. All the games felt the same. But now we've got that sweet spot again, which I think we had, you know, roughly 2010, right? When they'd kind of scaled back the bats, but they didn't overcompensate yet. We had that one year where I feel like we had a really good balance, and then it went way overboard. Now I like where we're at again. And for me, I just think the sport is more interesting to watch than the big league game.
Oh,
love it.
Agreed.
Mine's easy. Just the, you know, like I think like a lot of coaches, Oak, for me, my playing experience was amazing. Like those are friends for life. It was awesome. Yeah. My coaching experience was awesome. Same thing. And just, I love the people in our game. I love, you know, the college baseball player. It's like, they're very skilled, but they're still kids, but they're not high school kids. I don't know. Like the college age kid is such a fun human being to be around. I have enjoyed incredible relationships in my college baseball experience. I think that's the thing that keeps me coming back.
Great.
So, all right, Oak. So let's go round two. I'm coming back at you. What? Okay. Here's the one I want to do. So I'm going to go, cause we did talk a little bit about this year's team. I want to go back in program history again. I want to talk about the 2014 team. So your 2015 team wins the whole thing, but I almost think what the 2014 team did is actually harder, and we never see it. I could be wrong about this first fact, but if I'm not mistaken, you guys were ranked number one in the preseason in 14. If you weren't, you became the number one team very, very quickly, and literally took that wire to wire to game three of the finals. And so, like, I've always had this assumption, this belief that is a huge piano to carry around for, you know, 4.5 months. I'm just curious from the inside, Oak, is that something that does weigh on a team and a coaching staff, that, you know, you're number one the whole time, and you literally, again, we just don't see, look at Arkansas this year, as good as they were, you know, they don't even get to Omaha. I don't know. I just feel like it's so rare to see a number one team carry that banner that long, like you guys did in 2014.
Well, I can tell you it is, because we've been in that situation a couple of times. You know, in 2011, Runes, we finished 22-8 in the league and had won like 56 games that year. We were like 56-10 or something in 11. You know, and so in 2013, I think we were 50-12 that year. So there were a few years we've been in that scenario, and that's challenging, right? I mean, the expectations are up here, and getting your guys to continue to perform on that level. And like you said, you got that piano on your back, and it gets heavy at times. But I'll tell you, as a competitor and somebody that, you know, his job is to build an elite team, an elite program, that's pretty satisfying too. You'd love being in that situation, that you feel like, all right, you got all the horses and you should be there. But you're right. It's very, that's part of the reason. I mean, you asked me, why do you love college baseball? There's many answers to that. One of them is that, you know, it's so incredibly tough to get to Omaha. It's so hard to win the national championship. And a lot of most times the most talented team throughout the year might not even be in Omaha and doesn't even win the national championship. That doesn't take anything away from anybody that does, but that's how tough and competitive and difficult it is. I think it's easier to do, much easier to do in a sport like football, right? That clearly the class could run the table and win the whole thing. So, you're right. It's 14 was a challenge because a lot of people felt like we should win it all. And I felt like that was probably hands down our most talented and skilled team. When we won it all in 15, you got Pavin Smith and Hazley and those kind of guys that are all true freshmen that are carrying the load for you, and you end up winning it that year. So it's tough. It's, you got to, my, through my experience, when you have clubs like that, Runes, you got to keep your foot, your thumb on them more than you ever have. Right. More so than maybe when the expectation are not as high.
Love it.
That's interesting perspective there. Cause you know, I wonder about that too. These teams that, you know, the preseason consensus number ones. I mean, people talk about pressure, but there's something to that, you know, just the weight of expectations. I mean, especially we're talking about 18 to 21 year olds, but I mean, for any of us, you know, you're out on the golf course with your buddies, like you feel pressure. I can imagine, you know, in that situation, it's really got to be magnified. That's got to be a challenge.
Aaron, you know, this game comes down to, you got to, the kids got to have fun. They got to enjoy doing it too. And sometimes that you got to figure out, I believe, as a manager, for them to come to the ballpark every day excited and looking to have fun and enjoy being around each other and enjoy competing to win, not trying to live up to something, you know? And it's tough. It's been fun to be in those situations in a handful of years and try to and figure out how do we handle this? How do we navigate this? Maybe the experiences that we had in 2011, 2010, we were really good and had great expectations and won 50 games. And so having the experiences that we had in 10 and 11, I think probably helped me as the manager a few years later handle the team when you start out the year with enormous expectations.
My question, I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction here. I got some a little off the wall. I don't know if you guys know Kendall Runes, but Oak and I have starred in a motion picture together. 1186 to Omaha, the story of the 2015.
Oh, that's right.
Cavaliers. We both appeared. He had a much bigger role than me. You know, I was waiting for my best supporting actor nomination. It didn't come, but, I want to know, because I have a person in mind. If there were a movie about your life, is there an actor that you would want cast to play you? Because I've got a guy.
I got a guy. That's great.
I want to hear your guy because I don't have a guy. I have no idea. I really don't feel like my life's been that interesting. So I gosh darn it, I don't know. Help me, please.
I'm going to throw this out there. I got an Owen Wilson. I feel like that's right in his wheelhouse.
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's high praise. Owen Wilson.
Yeah. I feel like you got to have a little bit more of a serious actor though.
That's true. But you know, I mean, we just tell Owen to lay off the reefer a little bit and you get his character.
Oh, that's great.
All right. Okay. I'll take that. You know, I'll make sure that it. I'll make sure that I go home and tell my wife that you think I'm Owen Wilson.
That's right. That's
right. Oak, I was going Kevin Costner, Field of Dreams, Heartland,
Midwest. That's actually Midwest. A good one.
But he, you know, where I struggle with that is he's really a Californian. So like he's a faux Midwesterner in the movie only. But I think Costner would be a good Brian O'Connor.
He's too old though. Costner's too old.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I didn't get on it early enough. I should have. I was actually in Iowa when the Field of Dreams game was being played and didn't think about it early enough to try to make it to that game. And boy, missed the opportunity. What a great job that game MLB did with that that deal. That was really, really awesome.
So what was it, like 5,000 people, or it seemed like a very small stadium?
Yeah, I thought it was like 6,000 or something like that. That they brought in the seats, and I think they just did a terrific job with it. So
yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
All right, KR, you're up.
Oak, I'm going to go a little different direction here as well. We didn't talk to you a lot about it in Omaha, but just kind of looking back at your relationship with Paul Maneri, who certainly retired after a phenomenal career at LSU. Give me your two best/funniest Paul Maneri stories from your days with Paul.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, first,
you can give me one if you don't want to go through two stories.
Yeah. First, Kendall, I'd be remiss if I didn't just tell share with everybody how much that guy has meant to me in my life and still does. You know, just talked to him the other day and still keep very close contact with him. And the impact just, you know, I worked in the office next to him for 9 years, right? And just the stories are endless about the impact that personally he made on me and then the players that that played for him, you know. And you know, I remember back like it's yesterday, you know, when he called me when I was on a recruiting trip, and he called me in the summer of 2003, and all of a sudden I picked up the phone and he says, "Hey, what are you doing? Where you're at?" And I said, "Oh, well, I was somewhere recruiting." And he said, "I just talked to your new boss." And I said, "Excuse me? Like, what are you talking about?" And I didn't have any idea the Virginia job was open, didn't look at it or anything like that. And he said, "I actually just got off the phone with Craig Littlepage, the athletic director at Virginia. And I'm telling you, this is the right job for you." You know, I had previously the year before interviewed at Michigan for their head coaching job. And at the time I was 31, 32 years old, and just for him to call me and said, "This is it." Right. And that, like, it's not fun. It's not funny. It's a serious story, Kendall, that like for somebody to think so much of somebody else to say, "Go," right. To, you know, I might understand somebody if they feel like an employee is doing a good job for them to have very selfish motives, right? And he was just like, "This is it. You got to go. You know, if it's what you want to, if it's what you want to do, this is the place." You know, and it just the profound impact that he made on me. But like, you know, just to see the Paul's a serious guy. You know, he took his profession as a head baseball coach as serious as anybody, more serious than anybody I've ever been around. The incredible detail in everything that he would do, that he would run an organization, was incredible, right? And he handled people with class. How he would handle the relationships with the young people, was the players, was just amazing. And you know, I shed a tear the day of his last game, you know. And just because I know the impact that he's made on so many people.
Love it.
No doubt.
Yeah.
All right, Oak, you wrap us up. Final question.
Oh, geez, final question. All right. Well, Runes, I was gonna ask you, what's your favorite college baseball games of all time? Like, what would be in each of yours? And this might take too long. Each of the three of you, what would be your quad box? Right? What would be your four games?
And we can go into history for this.
You can go into history for this.
Okay, mine's easy. I'll go quick. I'm gonna go. I had that Duke Vandy Super Regional a couple years ago when Kumar, you know, Duke ran Vandy off the field Friday night, 18-5. They beat him. The eventual national champions just shocked them. And then Kumar Rocker has to pitch against Bryce Jarvis, who was no joke. And, you know, he makes history. 19 strikeout, no hitter as a true freshman. Just insane. So that is absolutely going in the quad box. What are you going, Fitzy?
Mine's also easy. And it's the last game of Rosenblatt, 2010. Mm-hmm. Ends in a walk-off. Extra 10-inning game, right? You know, South Carolina over UCLA. A lot of talent, future big leaguers on that field. But it was so bittersweet. And, you know, I get goosebumps thinking about, you know, that last time the trumpet plays there, and everybody in the press box after the game, just kind of delirious, not really sure, you know, what to do with themselves. Like, this is really the end. It was surreal. I mean, I guess you were there the year earlier with Virginia. So you didn't, you didn't get to experience the last one, the Rosenblatt, but it was very emotional. But also it was just a great World Series. It was so compelling. The action in that South Carolina team, you know, the ridiculous run through the loser's bracket that they made. I mean, just you know, walking the tightrope the whole way. That was a special group of kids. And then UCLA team with Colin Bauer, man. I mean, geez, talk about talent. Great way to finish that stadium. And I'll never forget, you know, just driving back down 10th Street toward the hotel again afterwards, and you see that view for the last time with the moon hanging low over the stadium, and you know, just really an emotional moment. And I love that place, we all did. But I'm so glad that we sent it out the right way with a really all-time classic game.
That's good.
Two games in modern history for me, you know, one of them honestly would be game two, Arkansas and Oregon State. I mean, I think I was like right behind the Oregon State dugout whenever Arkansas got the first out, and like you went from these Arkansas fans literally jumping around the aisles to, you know, Trevor Larnach hit that home run. So just that swing of emotion to me is something I'll always remember. And I think the other one for me was Mike Martin in his final super regional beating LSU at the box. I mean, we all know how hard it is to knock out LSU at the box in a super regional. And you just kind of felt when you walked in the box that last day, like, I just felt like Florida State was definitely going to win. It was just one of those weird kind of eerie feelings. And to see Mike celebrate after that game is something I'll remember for a pretty long time.
Crazy. Oak, do you have one? How about the 91 Creighton-Wichita State game? That was you probably can't put that one in there. That's a pretty famous ball game, though.
Yeah, pretty famous ball game that was truly lost is the losing pitcher in it, you know. So I was on the mound. I was the closer on that team in 1991, and got the loss in extra innings in that ball game. So, you know, certainly that would be not having won it, but it'd be a memorable one for me and one of the great games I think in college baseball history and in the World Series. But, you know, for me, one is personally for UVA is in 2009 when we had these young group of freshmen, you know, Procia and Hicks and guys like that, and beating Steven Strasburger, you know, getting sent to what they considered the regional of death, and went and stepping up and winning that game. And I really think that's the win that catapulted us ultimately to get to Omaha. But there's many when you do this long enough and coaching them, there's many of them for sure.
Who was the guy that hit the home run off of Strasburg early in that game off the scoreboard?
Phil Goslin, right? Yeah. House. Come on.
I forget where that guy went to high school.
Was that a very unintentional Malvern press?
Yeah, it sure was.
Wow. Wow. Raised you well.
Hey, yourself on the back here.
Hey, Kendall, let me tell you this, though. The most important at bat was the at bat before. Jarrett Parker, who all you know has played in the big leagues, he's a leadoff left-handed center fielder for us. He had a 10-pitch at bat in the first at bat of the game. Strasburg had to throw him a 3-2 changeup to get him out. The first at bat, 10-pitch at bat, next pitch, fastball, Goslin hits it off the scoreboard. And I turned to our team and said, we're going to do this. If this guy needed to throw a 3-2 changeup the first at bat of the game, we got a shot. And next pitch, Goslin gone.
I was at that game, and that's on my short list also of most memorable games I've ever covered. But because Maury was great. I mean, he was really good. But people forget also that Irvine team was the best team in the country that year. Yes. Like they were number four national seed, but in our rankings, they were number one for like 6 weeks in a row. I mean, they should have been the number one seed as far as I'm concerned. They were really good. So you got that, and you had the defending national champions as your fourth seed, Fresno State. I mean, like that's an absurd regional to go in there and win.
It was, and Aaron, you know what? We gave up three runs in the entire regional.
Wow.
Our pitching and defense. The problem is Irvine, after we won the first game, they got Danny Holson, right? In the 1-0 game. So it worked out pretty good for us.
Love I'd it. Say. Oak, this was awesome. Thanks for doing this. This was great. Talking about this year's team going down memory lane. We really appreciate it. Good luck this fall. And I'm sure you'll see Fitzy this fall at one of your fall games.
For sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Fitzy's a believer. We'll get him. We'll have him out. We look forward to that.
No doubt. Look forward to it, Coach.
That's great. Thanks, Coach. Hey, thanks, everybody, for listening. We will catch you next week. Have a great week, everybody.